All right, here we go. I'm just going to go over the main ones. Like, I'd be embarrassed if you came out of this institute and didn't know the answer to these, okay? First one is basically, who made the world? And don't forget that this question has come up in conjunction with who made the lousy things in the world, okay? And the purpose of Buddhism is to address all the problems you have. I'm not talking, like, it's hard to get people worried about their bardos. It's hard to get people worried about their death. It's hard to get people worried about the suffering of mankind. Who made your boss? You know, who made traffic? Who made the IRS? You know, who made all the things that irritate you from hour to hour? I mean, those are really, who made the gray hairs on your head or the no hairs on your head? Or, you know, why aren't you happy, you know, during the day? And the question is, where do those things come from? You must address it. Now, in your culture, they taught it the wrong way 500 years ago, right? Somebody, big guy up in the sky made these things, and we don't know exactly why, and it's one of life's questions. You know what I mean? I saw Joan of Arc the other day, and they're sitting there trying to figure out why did God do these things, you know? And no one in modern America really believes those things, but no one in modern America really thinks about where all the problems are coming from, right? And so I don't think it's your duty to go out into the world and try to correct the idea that there's a big guy with a beard up there doing these things. No one believes it anyway, okay? You just have to try to supply some kind of information about where it's coming from, okay? And again, there's three main choices, right? Really, if you press an American about where is all this stuff coming from, they'll say, well, science says it's just a big bang, and particles bumped into each other particles flew out, hit other particles, and that's why my nose is shaped like this. Okay? And, okay, that's one theory. It doesn't hit you in the gut, you know what I mean? It doesn't seem to be likely that just because a bunch of things are randomly bumping into each other, you have led your particular life the way you did, and you look the way you do, and you've had all the experiences that you're having. It doesn't really seem to be random. You know, it almost defies logic that something could be random, especially because part of the random theory is that there was no beginning and then something happened. Okay? Which is just totally unacceptable, even in science, which is telling you that's how it started. You know, that everything has a cause, and that's why we can make atom bombs blow up. But the very most important thing doesn't have a cause, and because we can't figure it out. You know what I mean? That's just illogical. That's like the Tibetans saying the second worldview, okay? Which is there's some big guy who made it. And then you try to explain that to a Tibetan, and they say, no, it was a monkey with a white deer. It wasn't a guy that broke this guy's rib and made a woman and then they got together and that's why we're here. It's not like, you know, that's theory number two. Some big guy, be it a deer or a monkey or a guy in a weird garden, you know, or something like that. It defies logic. Who made the guy if the guy made everything? I mean, it's a children's question and it's irrefutable. It doesn't make sense that there could be a guy who didn't get made by some other guy. Or maybe there's two guys. Or maybe he had a godfather or something. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense, okay? It just clearly doesn't make sense. And if this guy likes us, then why is he torturing people? You know what I mean? If he can control everything, then why are people hurt? Oh, it's a test. Okay, I understand it's a test, but why test babies who die of AIDS? Why test children who get into fires? You know, what's the point of this kind of test? You know, test people who are mature and can understand the test and fail or pass the test. But why torture infants who haven't had time to say anything yet, okay, or do anything yet? Those two are clearly unacceptable. Third idea, things come from things like themselves. Watermelons come from watermelons, oranges come from oranges, good events come from good causes, bad events come from bad causes. You hurt somebody, you have a bad event. You help somebody, you have a good event, okay? That's all. It's that simple. The content has to be similar. And the thing must have happened before. And that's the rule for everything else, and why not for your life, and who made the bad things in your life, okay? So really, you face a huge task. You know, we're going to have 10 or 15 courses going on here next year. It's not the point of those courses. It's not the point of whether it's going to, the homeworks are going to be right, or the, or you're going to get better refreshments than you got here or anything like that. You know, the question is, we got a worldview to talk about. You see, I mean, there's a question of, were they right 500 years ago when they said it was a big guy? Were they right 20 years ago when they decided it was a big explosion at the beginning? Or is Buddhism right when it says, if you don't like what's going on around you, you don't like getting old, you don't like dying, then you change your behavior. And you take responsibility for what's happening around you. And don't blame other people, and don't get angry at other people, and don't whine and complain. And also, don't sit there and die quietly, you know, without complaining. Like, I like that thing, go not quiet. How's it go? Into that dark night or whatever, I don't know. You know, don't just sit there and die quietly and say, oh, I can't figure it out. You know what I mean? You are charged in the next Buddhist generation of America to inform people of this third possibility, that their world is created by their actions and their thoughts and their words. And if you don't like it, then keep your book. Okay? That's all. And you know, it's a life or death question for those people. Okay? And you have that responsibility now. That is the most important thing about this course, about this whole institute, and about on your final. You know, where did things come from? And how are you going to fix it? Okay? And really, you're up against those, you're up against three other worldviews. I didn't mention the third one, which is what? I didn't think about it. You know? I just didn't think, I'm just trying to get by, you know? I'm just trying to make it to tomorrow. I don't think about where things came from, or, you know, philosophy and stuff like that. I'm not interested, or I don't care, or I don't think about it. You see, I mean, that's the hardest one, is to get people to even think about that they're getting old and going to die, okay? And that all the activities they're doing in their lives are meaningless without understanding where things really came from. Because it's just all going to be ripped away from you at some undetermined moment in the future. Tonight or tomorrow or a week from now or a year from now, you're going to lose everything that you think is important now. So how do you get people to wake up and think, why are things happening and can they change it or not? Do you have to die or not? Okay. And some of the most frustrating opponents are the other Buddhist groups who say, meditate on your breath, or be nice, or work for peace in a Gwanga, you know, or something. And those are noble things, those are good things. But that's not what Buddha came here to teach. Buddha came here to teach people how to get out of death and suffering of all kinds through a very radical transformation of your own behavior. Okay? And that's the main thing. That's the worldview of Buddhism. You created your reality and you have to live with it, and there's only one person responsible, and there's only one major task that you have to do, is to change yourself and keep your vows and change your reality. Okay, I'm not saying the other things aren't important, they're important, but they pale next to, can you overcome death itself and suffering, all kinds of suffering, mental and physical? How do you get rid of that? How do you wake people up in a realm where they're like insane, and they think you're crazy when you tell them that? You know what I mean? You're crazy. No, you're crazy. You know? What are you working for? I want a house. I want a family. I want a job. I'm not greedy. I just want a normal, comfortable, I don't need a mansion. I'm not talking about a Cadillac. I'm not even talking about a Lexus. I can live with a Toyota or a Honda. You know, I just want a house in New Jersey. I don't need Donald Trump's house. You know, I just want to be happy some of the time, not get cancer too early. That's all I'm trying to do, you know. And how do you wake up people like that? You know, how do you get them to see that they're crazy to want that because they can't keep it. And they can't get it anyway. And if by some miracle they do get it, it won't make them happy. And even if it does make them happy, which is impossible, they'll lose it anyway. So, obviously, you know, there's not a debate. Nobody's jumping and raising their hands at this very moment in this class and saying, oh, that's wrong, you know. It's obvious, but how do you get people to wake up? So you have this whole the very most important questions on the final relate to where did this world come from? And can you do anything about it? And wake up and do something about it. Okay? And take responsibility for your world. You created it. You fix it. Okay? And I think it's that old God thing in the 500 years ago is sort of paralyzing people. Deep down inside, Western culture still has this tiny belief that someone else will take care of it, someone else made it, someone else did it. You know, I don't have to. Really, you are the only person who can fix the world. Okay? And you have to try. Okay? Okay. I like question number 10. How does Master Shantideva address the objection that we could never learn to treat ourselves and others exactly the same, since their pain does not hurt us and our pain does not hurt them? You stick a needle in my finger, it's not like Elizabeth Prather jumps up. You know? It's not like that, she goes, ouch. You know what I mean? So, this whole thing about me becoming somebody else in the room and we becoming one person is artificial. You know, and then they're saying, don't forget Master Shantideva's answer. Defining yourself as ending at your own skin is artificial. Okay? Whatever idea you have about who you are now it's a creation. It's a fiction. You have written that book and you forgot. You see what I mean? You decide where you ends. Okay? There's nothing automatic about it. You had a kid and suddenly you decide that you're twice as big as you were before. You know, you get seriously ill and have to take a piece of your body out. You've rejected it. That's not me anymore. You see what I mean? You decide how big you are. It's not your skin. It's a fiction. It's a convention. It's been that way all along. It's not true that you have to end at your fingers or at your community or at your country or at your race or at your sex or anything else. That's all fictions. Those are all creations. You decide whether people should be treated equally. You decide whether you are just limited to this skin or do you stretch a little further. You decide that. Mothers make that decision when the children are born. Almost automatically they decide that the children deserve as much food as they deserve. Automatically. That's just a fiction. That's just a decision. So don't say you can't feel someone else's pain as much as you feel your own. That's a decision. You just decided not to do that. Okay? And watch a mother. Go stick a pin in some... Walk up to a mother on the street who has a baby in a carriage and take a big needle and say, could I stick this in your kid's hand, you know? And see what they say. You know what I mean? And see if they think that pain is their pain or not. You see what I mean? Because they've been able to achieve that. And the resistance to doing that is why you're in this realm. You entered this realm. You're suffering in this realm. And you will die in this realm as long as you resist the idea that you can't expand yourself to other people. That's the source of Gubba Tamjiki Go. You know, all the troubles in the world come because you've decided to keep this artificial distinction between you and other people and take care of this bag of skin more than you take care of that bag of skin. Okay? That's just it's a decision and it's dysfunctional. It causes all your problems. And every time you're unhappy, it's because you're concentrating on yourself at the expense of other people. And almost, I can say every case of unhappiness, every case of irritation, is based on selfishness. Okay? If you're really thinking about someone else, what they want, you can't be unhappy. Okay? You can't feel angry or upset or anything. If you're really thinking about other people. Okay? This question about the six-step process described by Maitreya for how all the trouble starts, okay? How does Buddhism say all the trouble started? To me, it's one of the most precious teachings. You have to know it. You have to understand it, okay? Six steps. First one, you have a tendency from your past life. In your past life, you thought of things as self-existent. And therefore, in this, you enter this life with this inbuilt problem. It's almost like original sin, okay? You enter this life with a wrong way of looking at things. Okay, put it in a nutshell, what's that way of looking at things? Especially when you strongly dislike something, or when you strongly like something, you are forgetting that that's a neutral object, and the reason you see it as good as or bad is your own karma. Okay? That's all. It's this tendency to think that good things and bad things are that way from their own side, and not because you're seeing them that way, because of the seeds you put in your own mind. Okay? That's all. And that tendency to believe that came from your past life. Okay? First one. Second one. Those tendencies from your past life ripen, and then you start misunderstanding things in this life. Ignorance begins in this life. Okay? Every time something good happens, you think it's coming from its own side. Every time something bad happens, you think it comes from its own side. Okay? Number three. This causes you to focus on good things and bad things and believe that they come from their own side. So you have what are the first three? You have the potential from your past life, the seed from your past life. Then you start to see things wrong. And then you start to focus on good things and bad things and have these wrong ideas about them. Okay? Particularly bad things. Okay? I didn't make that somebody else's fault. Or that person's fault. Okay? But since somebody else finds them to be attractive or nice, it must be you. It must be your problem. Okay? Number four. Then you get, having focused on good things and bad things the wrong way, number four comes, which is to start liking and disliking in an ignorant way, please. Okay? Nobody should ever graduate from ACI, you know, oh, I went through 18 courses at ACI. Oh, so you must know Buddhism. Yeah. So is it bad to like things? Is it bad to dislike things? You say, oh yes, the Buddha said overcome all attraction and hatred, you know. And then you say, so Lord Buddha doesn't like it if someone reaches nirvana, right? And Lord Buddha doesn't dislike it when people suffer in the hell realms, right? Because Lord Buddha's above liking and disliking. Okay, and then you have to say, come on, that's stupid. We mean liking and disliking in an ignorant way, in a wrong way. Okay, what is it to like or dislike in a wrong way? Oh, I like this thing, so I have to protect it. How? Hurt other people. Why? So I can keep the thing. Then a Buddhist should start laughing at that point. Ha ha ha, you know. Yeah, yeah, you want to keep the thing, so you're hurting other people? You know. That's exactly the wrong thing to do, you know. You want to keep the thing, share it with other people. You see what I mean? That's how you keep things. No, no, I got to keep other people away from the thing I want. No, no, stupid, you have to share it, you see. Then you get it, you see. It's the opposite of the human reaction, okay. If you don't like something, what? Be patient, love it, stop being angry. Okay? And that's how you get rid of it. You want to eliminate people, don't use a gun, don't use hatred, don't use poison. Just love them. And they have to change. Okay? And they'll leave your life like that. The disturbing, irritating people will leave your life. Okay? That's how to get rid of them. Okay? And it's not some noble thing to sit there and put up with them for the rest of your life. That's not what Buddhism teaches. Buddhism says, actively love them, help them, support them, as they're screwing you. Okay? And then sit there and watch them flip over and start sending you checks. You know what I mean? And that's the approach, you know. They hit you on this side, give them this side. Hit me on this side, you know. I want to get rid of the karma. Okay? And you love them and you take care of them and you... Okay? Does that mean that you don't stop a mugger on the street? Of course you stop a mugger on the street. But not with any kind of hatred. Okay? That's a different thing. You do the right deed because of love for them. Okay? And the right deed might be punching them to stop them. But you love them as you do it. Okay? That's the difference. Okay? That's the difference between ignorant liking and intelligent liking and ignorant disliking and intelligent disliking. Yeah? Not really. I mean,
you're inviting them to hurt you and
thereby hurt themselves. Yeah, they might hurt themselves. When you're at a higher level, like King Udayana was an arhat. His son sent some assassins to kill him. He knew that when that assassin killed him, his own son would collect two of the five immediate bad deeds. You know, killing an arhat and killing a parent. And so out of compassion for his son, he tried to fly in the air. And couldn't. But yeah, that's possible.
That's possible.
But then the normal reaction is to fight them back or something like that. It's not like that. In hatred, you know. I don't know. How do you stop them? Where did they come from? Okay. Because you like something, because you want to protect something, or because you dislike something and you want to get rid of it, you do some kind of bad karma towards them. Okay, that's number five. That's where bad karma comes from. Because you don't understand where they came from, you do something violent back to them, and you thereby assure that they will come back to you again. Okay? Mostly I put my Maitreya thing in here because I didn't want people saying, I made this up. This connection between emptiness and karma. I didn't hear that in any other Buddhist lectures. It's that Geshe Michael who's always saying that. You know, it's Maitreya, okay? Karma and emptiness got married a long time ago, and they're still having, they must be on their 10 billionth anniversary or something, okay? Things are empty, and that's why you have to be good, okay? And you gotta bring those two great wings of the teachings have to come together, okay? Or you can't fly, says Master Satyadeva. Okay, number six. Perpetual circle. Okay? Because you got angry and acted back again, then you're gonna have to see this angry person again in the future. Okay? Right? By the way, Debbie, I mean, the one strong thing is this. You are allowed and maybe required under the laws of Buddhism, even from the lowest level of, you know, pratimoksha vows, to respond to violence perhaps with using one of the first seven bad deeds if you have to. Okay? But never the last three. Okay? You can never use the last three to help anybody. You can never dislike someone. Let's just say, you can never be unhappy that someone else got something. You can never be happy that someone else had a problem. And you can never entertain stupid ideas about where the world came from. Those three things would never help another person. So there's a lot of latitude about the first seven. You know, depending on the power of your motivation. It's the priest who smacks the guy on the, what is that movie? Point of No Return, 1954 or something, black and white. He's freaking out on the plane and upsetting the other passengers because the plane's going to fall down. And the priest, out of compassion, unloads and knocks him out very quietly in the back of the plane and says, oh, this guy must have had too much to drink or something, you know. You know, that kind of thing, okay. That's not, you can't hate, though. You can't hate for the Dharma or hate for the sake of sentient beings or something like that. You can't break the mental ones. That's the main thing, okay. All right. Those of you who already got the answer key, I think the class leader's answer number 15 is the wrong answer for that question. It was a test to see if you ever read them. Okay. But you'll figure it out. I think question number 20 is really cool. The Holy Lama Drapa Gyaltsen describes, quote, attachment to this life, unquote, as attachment to one's practice of the ethical life and to one's learning and to one's contemplation and to one's meditation. Explain the real meaning of attachment to one's practice of the ethical life. Like, how could it ever be that it was wrong to be ethical? Or to love your ethics. You know, what does Drapa Gyaltsen mean? The Holy Lama Drapa Gyaltsen, who is, I think, the most important Lama in the Vajrayogini tradition, okay? So here's Jetsun Drapa Gyaltsen, okay? And he says it's wrong to be attached to morality, to your ethical way of life. What could he possibly have in mind? Well, here's what he has in mind. Don't let your ethics be run by anything else except Buddhist logic, okay? Which illuminates the following. Instincts, okay? People are born with a lot of instincts, like you don't enjoy hurting other people, or you don't enjoy lying, or you have this thing where you can't stand to borrow money and not pay it back within a day. You see what I mean? And so you consider yourself a good person. This is just hard work that your former lives did to get you up to this semi-human level, okay? And you can lose it in 2 weeks of true need, you know. I was so proud that Americans never did what those crazy Indians did when there was a kerosene shortage in Dharamsala and fought each other around the last kerosene shipment. You know what I mean? I said, Americans will never do that. We're too civilized, you know. And I get back and there's this gas shortage during the Middle East crisis, and people are shooting each other at the gas tank, you know, and I'm like, you know what? Instinct. You see, being good because you have an instinct for it is very fragile. You can lose it easily. Okay? If you don't understand why you're you know, you're born into this life because your last life did a hell of a lot of hard work. And you think you're moral just because you're moral. You know what I mean? That's not true. Whatever instincts you have to be a good person, they're fragile. They were built carefully over lifetimes of work by that last guy. Okay, and don't think they're not changeable. You can lose them in a week if you really have a bad friend, or you run into some bad people or bad influences, or you need something really bad. All this self-control will just melt away in about a week. You know what I mean? And so don't lead yourself to your instincts. Okay, they're beautiful, and try to grow them like a flower. Okay. Second one, to what feels good. Okay. What feels good and what's right is often quite different. Okay. And that's just the way things go. You know, what feels physically good or mentally good is often not the right thing to do. And you can't be attached to your morality in that sense. You can't be following certain kinds of ethics because they feel good. And once you get higher up in Buddhism, you can't be lazy and do lesser virtues when you could have done bigger virtues. See, I'd say most of us have that problem. You see what I mean? It's not like we're all tempted to go out and rob people or something like that. It's like, what are you going to do with the income that you do have? You know, are you going to feed monks at Sera, donate to Lama Sutpa's Maitreya statue, or print books that describe correct view? You see what I mean? We're faced with other moral dilemmas, you know. Like, you've got three beautiful things to do now. Which one are you going to do? You see what I mean? And don't be lazy. You see what I mean? Move up to the... Keep moving up. Don't be attached to the level you're at now. Okay? And don't be attached to what feels good. Oftentimes, the right decision will be unpopular with the people around you. It won't feel good. It won't feel as good as eating three banana splits at once. And stuff like that, okay? Okay, number three, attachment to what your parents taught you, okay? I think 90% of the world is following what they follow spiritually only because it's what their parents did. No better cause than that. And there's this incredible belief, ignorant belief, that because my parents did it, it's right, you know? Whatever my parents said, I remember this with Democrats and Republicans. You know, like my parents supported Nixon, and the other kids' parents supported Kennedy. And I would fight with kids in eighth grade. You know, no, Nixon. They'd say, no, Kennedy. And I'd say, why? And they'd say, my mom said so. And I'd say, well, my dad said that Nixon was better. You know, and then I had this crisis of faith, and when I got to high school, when I finally figured out that what the Republicans were teaching. You know what I mean? And, you know, and what the Democrats were teaching. And I'm like, gee, this is harder than I thought. I can't. And my father liked Chevrolets. He said, never buy a Ford. You know, in those days it was Chevy or Ford. And I would just go to school and say, Chevy. You know, and they said, no, my dad said Ford, you know. And you would violently fight with other kids, you know, and no idea. But we're still doing that. You're still doing that. You know, a large amount of what you believe in, you only believe because your parents said so. You laugh about the Chevy and Ford thing. You have 1,000 other viewpoints that you're still holding that you're not laughing about. Okay? Just because your parents said so. Teachers, particularly elementary school teachers, go back, visit them. It is frightening. Okay? Those who are still alive, you know. It's frightening, you know. I mean, in those days, they were God, you know. And whenever they said, you know, the Russians are bad, you know, like, you know. And then you go to Russia at age 45. And meet these beautiful, you know, sensual, poetic, literal, freak-out, romantic, brilliant people, you know. You're like, where'd you come from, you know? Did they just import you, you know? And they said, no, we've been here all along, you know. And you're like, wow, they told me you were evil. And they said, yeah, they told us you were evil too, you know. And, okay, you have to give up those. Okay, what's your early religious instruction was, okay? can't be attached to it. You know, you have to examine it. Okay. I remember big. I went to my friend's Baptist church. I was in Episcopal. We were told the Baptists were naive. They were told that we were cynical and too something. And then I went to his church, and you know, they taught. They just said the Lord's Prayer with a different sentence than we did, so they were bad and we were right. And then you still carry those things. You still have those bachaks are still in you to believe it just because they taught it at your church. You know, and it takes such a leap to grow out of that. You know, I mean, slowly you grow out of it. Okay. Next one. What your culture has ingrained you to think. Okay. Just American culture. Watch R-rated movies, but don't watch X-rated movies. Have romantic fantasies about adultery, but never do it. You know what I mean? Like all these weird things that your culture is teaching you. Drink and be sophisticated, but don't become an alcoholic. You know what I mean? Drink a lot and be funny as you drink, but don't drink too much. You know what I mean? And all those things, you know what I mean? It's okay to have an abortion. You know, things like that. Your culture says it's okay. This year. And it might change next year. You have to make your own decisions. Otherwise, you're attached to that. Okay? What your peers say. Okay? I mean, one of the most painful things about being a Buddhist is that you slowly grow away from your peers and the people you grew up with. And the people you value and the people you love, peers and family, and they start viewing you as a weirdo because you won't do certain things and that you have certain viewpoints. And that's one of the most difficult things, to give up that attachment of following certain ways of life just because the other people in your high school who are your same age are now doing that. And you will look weird after a while, okay? By the way, that doesn't mean you drop the lines of communication. Okay, you can't say, I'm weird, so they're wrong, so go F them. You know what I mean? You can't do that. I mean, as a Buddhist, be weird and keep the lines open. You know? Say, I love you, send them Christmas presents, go home for Thanksgiving. You know, do those things, and then say, I'm going away for 3 years and I'm not going to talk to you. You know? But then don't reject them, you know, as people. People mistake leading your own life. They mistake that with you know, oh, actively reject your old friends and your family. No, love them as far as you can. Be warm love them and be with them as much as you can and things like that. It doesn't mean you reject them or that you ignore them or that you selfishly don't write to them because you're a Buddhist now and you're too busy, you know, or something like that. Okay. To what's legal or not, okay? That changes every few years, you know, like abortion, or like there was a constitutional amendment that alcohol was evil, and now everyone drinks, you know. So don't let what's legal run your life. Sometimes what's legal is correct, sometimes it's wrong. Sometimes what's illegal is right, and sometimes what's illegal is wrong. And you cannot be attached to what's right and wrong by the definition of the law only, okay, in where you live. By the way, although a lot of Buddhist morality is attached to local law, you see, I mean, one of the kinds of sexual misconduct, for example, is to like have sex with someone who's too young in your country. You see, I mean, it's tied to the customs of your country. So I'm not saying that. Like, you have to respect that kind of laws. But if the law is clearly immoral, you have to not follow it. And if there's clearly something immoral that's not against the law, you can't do it. Okay? That's all. And then the last thing, you know, do things because it makes sense karmically. Okay? Study karma, study scripture, understand emptiness, and let that inform your decision about what you do or what you don't do. And let that be why you practice your version of morality. Okay? And as you get further up, it gets harder. Okay, the decisions become harder, you know, and you become, you know, you'll have one big test that you have to get over, you know, like you'll have to stand there and let your society or your culture or your family truly think you're crazy, and you have to hold the line, you know. There will come a test or a few tests of why do you hold that moral position, and then you have to hold it. It's called sintam. Say sintam.
Sintam.
Hold your ground, you know. There'll be a test. There'll come a time. Something will come. And then you have to stand your ground and say, that I cannot do. That I will not do. And they're not going to, you know, it'd be almost easier if they said they're going to burn you at the stake. You know, that's almost like some kind of recognition. You see what I mean? Joan of Arc thing. But what's worse if you get ostracized or people think you're a bad person? Or that's much harder. Social rejection is much harder than being burned, I think. Or some kind of moral rejection of you because you hold a certain viewpoint. And that people don't like you anymore. But you have to hold that symptom. You have to, because it's correct. Because you've figured it out, not because of all those other things, but because you, based on your understanding of scripture and logic, have figured out that this is the right thing to do. Okay? I think I had one more here. Yeah, my favorite question. Last question, then I'll stop. And then we'll break out, okay? I heard you were told that you're not breaking out, but you are breaking out. Okay? Okay, number 25. The Heart Sutra says that the real goal of Buddhism is to, quote, stop the process of aging and death through, quote, stopping our ignorance. Marikpa me, say marikpa me. Marikpa sepa. Mepa ne. Dashi me. Direct quotation, okay? Direct quotation. I didn't make it up. You can stop the process of aging and death if you figure out this ignorance thing, okay? Is this a literal or a figurative statement, okay? It's literal, okay? And it is the goal of Buddhism, okay? And you have to try, okay? You really have to try to do it. The second part of the question says, well, if it's literal, how come we didn't see anybody reported in the New York Times that this person has suddenly become a 16-year-old girl. Okay? A little bit rosy complexion. Okay? Okay, why? Why didn't they report that? They can't see it. Okay? They just can't see it. Why? It's empty. Okay? What's it got to do with it? You can see it if you have the virtue. You can't see it if you don't have the virtue. That's all. In fact, it's created by that virtue. Okay? To them, the person looks like a 60-year-old balding man with a big smile and a silly laugh. Oh. Okay? Called the Dalai Lama. Okay? But to himself, what does he look like? You see, I mean, when he looks in the mirror, what does he see? Okay? So don't say it's impossible because you didn't see it. Ma tongwani men min mayin. In the logic scriptures, you know? It's not true that something doesn't exist because you didn't see it. Okay? Forget it. If the pen thing is true, okay? What did Geshe Langa teach for 7 years? Just think about this pen, you know? Okay? The pen thing. Don't forget the pen. The most important thing, okay? The pen thing proves that you can become a tantric deity in your lifetime. You have to try. You really have to try. If you keep the book, you'll start getting there. Okay? Will other people see it? No. They might even think you're a bad or a crazy person, okay? But do it. You have to try, okay? What's the process? Your inner winds and your thoughts are intimately connected. Every time you have a bad thought, they choke a little bit, okay? That causes the process of aging and death, okay? So what? I suddenly got older in a day? No, you had small irritated thoughts for 20 years, and that's why you're aging, okay? That the small irritations at the people around you, the small misunderstandings of your world, every time you had a little bit of insight into emptiness, the channels cracked open. Okay? When you have a direct perception of emptiness, they're wide open. Throttle is wide open. Okay? Then when you go back to normal perceptions, they're choked again. Or they're choked because you went back to normal perceptions. You see what I mean? The goal is to open them wide open, and then that causes a radical transformation of your physical body. Okay? And you start getting younger and happier and incredible. Things you couldn't do 20 years ago, you can do now. Okay? And it just gets better every day. Okay? And then finally, the process is finished. You're in this eternal youthful body. You have total compassion for other people. It's keeping your channels wide open. Channels change at that point. You don't have channels anymore. Okay? And you're just enlightened. Okay, so that's all I have to say. Alright, see you, take a break, and then we'll do it. And then I'll come back for a short talk at the end. Okay. Okay, we'll start. I'm not going to keep you long because I know it's late. I just wanted to go through, you know, it's been 7 years. We finished the last reading yesterday, okay? So all the translations have been finished. That was like the last 80 pages or something from the logic course, which we kind of nobody wanted to do, but we did it. So 18 courses are finished, and all the readings and everything else totally finished yesterday. Very should you. Anyway. Yeah. And that's like 4,000 pages of translations, and the whole Geshe course is there, and all the important parts of Buddhism. So I think it's like an important transmission event, you know? It's there. Now, whether it gets passed on to other people is your problem. Okay? And a lot of people here are going to be teaching in different places. You'll get an announcement in late January, early February. But it's really amazing. I think there will be about 40 courses going on throughout the world at any given time, ACI courses from those materials. I wanted to, you know, that's all I have to say. You guys have to pass it on, okay? And you have no excuse. You have a package for you, you know. Remember, you always have a place in Arizona to come. This thing will continue here. God's stuff will be there. You don't have any excuse not to practice. You have no excuse not to study. You have no excuse not to do long-term retreats. You have no excuse not to do... Everything is there. People have worked very, very hard to make sure there's a place here, to make sure there's a place in Connecticut, to make sure there's a place in Arizona. So you have everything you need. And you have Ken Rinpoche and Howell. And you can't... You're like... Unlike the first generation, you can't blame it on the outside circumstances. You have everything you need, so it's really just up to you. I'm into this thing where one of my teachers told me recently, when you wake up, I said, I'm getting grumpy, you know, and I think I'm getting older or something. And I get more and more grumpy. And they said, well, when you wake up in the morning, think of 5 things that you're thankful for. You know what I mean? And it's been like, and then I just told somebody that, and they told me, oh, that's what Oprah Winfrey said last week. You know? And she said it changed her life. I still think it's a good idea. Okay? You know, you get 5 one day, and then they said you get 10, the next day 10 come to you. So try it. You know, in the morning, think of 5 things you're thankful for in the morning. And instead of being grumpy or instead of thinking about all the things that went wrong, suddenly everything looks unbelievable. I want to tell you some things to be thankful for about what's going on here. I think first thing is Ken Rinpoche. Okay, imagine that 1954, out of 10,000 monks in Lhasa, he graduates first among the Geshes as a Lhurangba, first among the Angidambos, and then first among all the Angidambos, which means he is number one Geshe in the whole Tibet for that year. Gosipatala Palace. You know what you get in Tibet? You get a block of tea from China. But it's okay. The Dalai Lama gives it to you, you know. And so you have access to the greatest master alive, I think, you know, in my opinion, humble opinion, okay? You have direct access to this being. Graduated from Tantric College as the assistant abbot when I was 3 years old, okay? I think there's only two people I know of who graduated from the Tantric College who are still alive, okay? In Lhasa, and would have been the abbot, and would have been the Ganden Tipa, the holder of the throne of Jetsonkapa, would have been the next teacher of the Dalai Lama, okay, on that track. And you have this person sitting there in Howell, New Jersey, just waiting to give you classes, you know what I mean? You know, begging you to come for classes, you know what I mean? So you got that to be thankful about. You have a whole lineage of Serame Monastery, okay? You have 580 years of pure Dharma passed on from ancient India in totally pure. I once checked the Sanskrit against the Tibetan version of the Abhidharma Kosha. There is one syllable difference in the whole thing. And that's because they couldn't get it into the Tibetan. So they added a syllable. You know what I mean? And you have this pure, pure Dharma. And you have access to that. You can't complain about it. You have the original texts have been, you know, put on a platter and served to you. You know what I mean? And all those great minds, you see, I mean, it's not just the living lamas, you have all these lamas who are no longer here, no longer visible, you know, you have hundreds of lamas that you don't even know about because you went through these courses, and you have direct access to those beings, you know, and they have taught you, they are with you, and they are around you now, okay, those beings didn't die, they're around you, you have access to them, and you just have to be aware of that, you have to connect into that. You've had accurate teachings on the direct perception of emptiness and the bodhicitta, the direct experience of bodhicitta. So you've had an accurate presentation of that in these classes. Things to be thankful for. People to be thankful for, okay? I think Thelma to start with. When we started this first course, we went in a Honda to IKEA. We put all the furniture for the Dharma Center and the classes, and Thelma and me in a Honda Accord in one trip, okay? And she's on the floor curled up in a fetal position under all this stuff, and has given her time and her life for the last 7 years, okay? Free, okay? Paid for a lot of things, worked for the last 3 years at Three Jewels, free, okay? We're trying to find someone crazy enough to do it. We can't do it. We can't find them right now. Okay, and started the whole thing. People will say, oh, it's a great idea that you did the course. It's actually her idea, okay? But I don't like to admit it. there's Aura and Christy who assist me. You know, people think they're having a good time all the time. People get jealous of them, or you get to talk to Geshe-la all the time. People think bad things about them sometimes. These people work 7 days a week, no pay. They don't get any rest. We don't even get to eat sometimes. 24 hours a day. They don't get to talk to me. Or I made an appointment 3 months ago and just got a half hour. You know what I mean? And something like that. And they selflessly, without pay, all the courses, all the materials, all the arrangements, everything, for free, and they don't get you know, everybody's jealous of nothing because they don't get sleep, they don't get anything, they don't get to talk to me either, and working, you know, just really working hard, and they break down and cry like every other day. You don't know that, right? I just gotta go around the room, right? Debbie Bai has been doing all the been at Michael Wicks. I mean, when we started this place, Thelma can tell you, we couldn't get anybody to do anything. And I would get up and whine about it. I think now almost everybody in this room is doing something. So everybody's been doing the sound files so that people can get these things downloaded from the web anytime they want for free in the future. Working with Michael Wicks for that. Amber helped create God's dough, helps get us the place transferred, clean it out, and then is working on an archive of every tape that's ever been done here. She has labeled it, put it into a huge archive so that anyone can have anything in the future for free. Tsusim follows in house, especially in Mongolia, things like that. And that was trying to hook this big rock star, but we're still working on that. Thomas Olson single-handedly pulled together the Mongolian Dharma Center. They already started. Teachings are going on. He's been scrabbling around for the money, which doesn't exist, but he's been taking care of it. Went to Mongolia with a broken leg the first time. Didn't let it stop him. Came anyway. John Brady tried, but they told him he had to stop for a brain operation. And so he wasn't quite as strong as Thomas. Nancy Karen helped out 25 years ago, gave her loft for the first translations for Yeshe Dundan, and that was the beginning of these classes, okay? And has been working since then, and devoted Dharma students to it, and Godstow, running all the programs at Godstow right now. Al has just agreed to be materials manager in Arizona. Tasha will be teaching a course in Washington, D.C. in the next trimester. Roy is also teaching and will be helping in Arizona. Googie makes great paintings and keeps Ian in line. Ian makes the videos for Mongolia. Six wildly successful ones so far. Friday night, prime time in Mongolia, probably about 500,000 people watching for no pay and no, not much recognition at all. Trying to scramble around for money to do it. Pilar teaching free yoga courses to people for the last year or so, so they can learn to meditate better. Margie, been here since the first classes on the Diamond Cutter, no, the Golden Light Sutra, 1983, something? I don't know, something like that. Driving me around ever since, okay? Uncomplainingly, gets home at 3 in the morning. Anywhere I have to go, she's doing it. And great, great teaching. Michael Wigg, expert bodhisattva, never says no to anybody. It's a joke, you know? And will be the director of the Three Jewels Board and has done the Bodhi line and has sent, you know, anyone can call up from anywhere in the world and see what Dharma things are happening in New York this week. And he's taken responsibility for that. He pays for it. He doesn't get any credit for it. And been helping out here just selflessly for all that time. This is getting too long, I think. I don't know. Maybe I should just stop. What do you think? Nah. Scott Hamilton just did an extraordinary thing to get us to Nepal and take care of, actually personally made sure that all the expenses were taken care of in Nepal for the trip there. And I think ever since his first Everest attempt, has been coming to classes, even at 39th Street. He said he just wanted to learn a few words of Tibetan for the Sherpas, and look what happened. Okay. Sarah helped a lot at the reception recently, and will be helping out in Arizona. Paul helped at the reception and did things to do with the t-shirts and stuff there. Brooks has been teaching a nice class, and will be continue to teach. I still think you should do something in Brooklyn, you know, like the outlying lands, you know. Anyway, John Brady will be doing the ACIP, foolishly agreed to be director of the effort to continue to save 200,000 Tibetan books, and selflessly has already started to help in that process. Even when he was ill recently, he still kept going and doing it. Gail helps a lot with logistical support and will be teaching in California. I don't know where exactly, but she's going to be teaching a course. The Moores came here to New York just on a fluke. I met them in Arizona, I think. They're from Colorado Springs. And then they said, oh, we'll help out with the correspondence course, and have sent out 1,000 correspondence courses. Worked for 30, 40, 50 hours a week. When they got here, all the correspondence courses were a mess. Basically, the homeworks were very far behind, and now they're totally up to date. People get their homeworks right back. They get their correspondence courses when they need them. Everything is in order, and they'll continue to do that from Colorado. Christina just finished some of the editing for the videos in Mongolia, and will continue to do for Lama Sopas, doing a whole set for the whole year. Dwa and her husband teaching in Freehold, New Jersey, a nice group there, and they'll be continuing that course. And they've supported a lot of the Mongolia work and a lot of other things very quietly from their own pockets. Vilma, one of the Geshimas, until recently never missed a class. Or anyway, they get spoiled, you know, in 7 years. And an excellent Dharma practitioner and teacher, and will be running the coordinating the classes at the Three Jewels during the 3 years. Seamus showed up a couple years ago and started doing all the sound system, like, and especially for Rinpoche, set up a really beautiful sound system, and said, "Oh, you got to fix this up and make it fancier," and just selflessly put a lot of money into it, even though he's totally broke, and probably robbing banks, I think, and we never see him during the day. Really cool. Kevin I missed because he's behind the camera. He decided to film all the classes, and hundreds and I'd say maybe thousands of people have seen the videos and are using them. And he did that all on his own money, all in his own time. He sat with a baby and a wife, you know, and this video tape recorder is hooked up in his apartment, and did cable shows in New York. All his own idea and all his own money put out, and we have hundreds of hours of tape because of him, without any help much, okay? I'm trying to embarrass everybody equally. Ellie, I could say raised most of the money for Arizona, the biggest fundraiser for Arizona, and also taught classes at Three Jewels for years, and has also been helping me personally for years. Unsung hero, you know, working all that. And also has gotten, I could say, dozens of Tibetan scholarships in the United States to study here. A lot of the Tibetans studying in the United States is because she designed the scholarships and she went out and got them. Anne has been teaching at Three Jewels and will be one of the caretakers. Yeah. I know why you get a plus. Okay. And I think quietly has been a nice source for people who are having personal problems, because that's her specialty, that's what she knows how to do, and has helped many people. Marie Placidi, very quietly doing the mailing list for 1,000 years, and also done a lot of the book covers for the books you see, Ken Rinpoche's books, things like that, and will be helping at the Three Jewels. And also one of the Geshimas, okay, has completed all the courses from the beginning. I remember, you know, she wrote me a little note and said, "Can I take the course?" And there was this little Buddha on a computer or something. And I still remember the first day, you know. Like, we used to work next to me in the Diamond Company. Okay, Mom here, Andrea, aside from producing babies, has also... I don't know, most people don't know. We've been trying to find rare manuscripts throughout the United States to Xerox and send to Sarah for inputting, and she's been taking care of that quietly, very efficiently. Recently, for example, got all the great books of the early Sakyas, found them, got them Xeroxed, got them shipped over to Sarah. I don't hear about it. I don't know who's paying for it. it's kind of nice. But they go there, they get there, and they input them, and amazing, amazing stuff coming back, and she's been taking care of that. In fact, if someone's interested in the New York area to help continue with that, talk to her, okay? Like, it's a matter of going to libraries that we've already made agreements with and coordinating, copying the books. They don't have them in Tibet, they don't have them in India, okay? They didn't get out, okay? They got here, Okay, and so if you want to help, many of the libraries are willing to have them copied, but we don't have people to help do the work. Okay, who else can I pick on? Mercedes Benz, who Rinpoche says has very good karma, has been traveling with us for the last year or so, and has been helping Ian with all the videos in Mongolia and did a very good job with us. And they're really hits, you know, in Mongolia. Chudun La for many years coordinated all the extension courses, which hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people in many different states come up to me and say those were great. And she's been taking care of all that and most recently helping Ken Rinpoche a lot. And very, I think the main thing is a free hotel for thousands of people who come to New York. Which must take a lot of patience, and I admire it. She never complains about it. Okay, Patricia has been helping out with the dance therapy for the prison program and in the hospital up in Ossining with teenage girls who have problems, and just voluntarily took that over and has been teaching them with Pelma. They go up. And Pelma helps with the prisoners in the women's prison, and Patricia is still working to help them with dance therapy and also drives us around a lot. And it's going to be a good nun. Kunzok I don't have to talk about. Voluntarily, without any pay, without any support, quietly doing Wednesday night meditation class for, I don't know, 3 years now. Has a very devoted group of students. Quietly teaching Tibetan for free. Recently I became aware that all day on Friday he's seeing people, helping them. Like that, and for many, for a long time, helped with the ACIP project, okay, and many other projects, and very shy and never admit to anything. Mark Minervini is a problem because too many people signed up for his course, and 3 months before it starts, so don't try, it's booked, okay. No, and I have to say, a very good teacher and a very good student from the beginning. And we'll be helping out with the bookstore part of the Three Jewels, such as it is. Ted Lemon helping out with the sound, and also did a lot with the... he's working on a program that will allow you to look up any word in English or Tibetan and see how it was translated in the 3,000 pages that were translated in the last 3 years, 7 years. So the whole thing will be on the web, and then you'll be able to search for anything you want and also see the Tibetan for it. Okay, so he's working on that. And then that's being coded by Ian, Christy, and some other people. Okay. Then Rebecca recently has been helping a lot, especially with driving and stuff like that, until she donated the hospital her kidney stones. Kidney stones, right? I don't know what they are. Anyway, Petra, main thing, I think, getting this very sweet collaboration between our group and Lama Sepa's group. And, you know, I think about 90% of us tend the opposite way, like we'd like to see differences between groups, or we tend to think about the differences between groups. And to her, it's all like one big happy family, and she perceives it. She perceives opportunities to bring groups together the way business people perceive business opportunities. And then she's done these, I think the best thing is these incredible things to bring groups together. And especially the synergy between our group and the FPMT is her fault. So, and we've asked Lama Sopa, we've written a letter to please come and teach here like 3 or 4 times next year. And we're trying to schedule it with him and continue that relationship. Also, she's one of the main fundraisers for Arizona. I think a very large percentage of the funds were raised through Petra and other neat stuff that I don't have to talk about. Mark came from California, helped paint the store. Looks pretty. I didn't never like that army tank green, but she's kind of tough. Rob's helped a lot on all the trips. He did the video on a lot of trips, did a lot of the imaging in St. Petersburg and Russia, got them started. The great textbooks of Sarah May in Russia were all imaged now. All those images have been sent here into Sarah May. So the books that we lost 40 years ago are now saved. They're on computer images, and they've imported a lot of them. Vivian's idea with her baby to have the AA group here, and a very successful group, and I hope it continues. And methods to use 12-step and our stuff together. That was her idea, and now it's a big group and it's flourishing. Kelly cooks a lot and been very helpful logistically all along. Alalada's been cooking a little bit. And you got stuck in some other project. What is that, Mongolia or something? I don't remember. Huh? Oh, the prison project, yeah. Okay. Jehan is hiding. Okay, anyway. He's helped a lot with things over the years, and especially to, I think, question the teachings. And has been very active about questioning the teachings. And to bring up good questions in the right way and challenge things. Great thinker. Louise helps a lot. I don't know, she supplies me with materials for the classes in a very special way. And mainly brings to me ideas. And a lot of the ideas in the class come indirectly through Louise. And I think look forward to her teaching in her way. Elizabeth Prather has agreed to, I think, work in New York for at least a year and fundraise for all our projects, which is something we can't go on without it. And I did most of it before, and I won't be here. So she's been doing that. Dito, and by the way, she's taking care of most of the a lot of the trip, along with Fran Diane, who's hiding over there. Dito, the thing I remember Dito for, thankful, is the great Bodhisattva vow ceremony, set up things. She's a, what do you call that kind of art? Installation artist. And so she's done great jobs on getting all those things ready. Rob Ho is now the treasurer at Godstow, taking over that and doing a good job. We had some, you know, we had some like tight finances to get the sponsor, by the way, has agreed to pay for the closing of Godstow and another year's support, which is a lot of money. And he helped pull that off. Fran Diane, I don't know if you know, she's the free bookkeeper. Without a salary, working in the dungeon in the basement at Three Jewels, without any pay, without any support, sees me 10 minutes a month, has kept all the books perfectly, very nicely, and everything perfect. And also has taken care of all the visas and all the travel arrangements, okay? Camilo helped out in some of the computer imaging for Arizona and did once a great ID card for ACI, which I didn't use yet. And was very helpful in Sarah May, one of the people who helped coordinate the thing there. Matthew, and where is the other half? Okay, she's working on a book. Yeah, they're working on turning the lectures into books. They've cranked out 3 or 4 books already, really fine books, and we'll continue. Doubleday will probably just keep taking books from them. So these, I think eventually each course will have a book attached to it. And they're doing a very nice job on those books, working a lot, hours and hours. Chilton is hiding. Won't work, okay. I think about 10 years of intense work on the computer project. And I can't name all the things. I mean, started out, went there many times to India, wrote a lot of the programs that we use. Intense work on all the standards and the Tibetan fonts and things like that. I mean, a lot of the reason it works is because he works so hard. Janice, we've been together since she was 3 or so. And she was a great King Udayana in the children's play when she was 6. That shaped her life. No, and we'll be teaching, now we'll become a teacher here, and we'll be teaching in the second trimester of 2000. And has always been a very devoted student and a great student of Buddhism. What are those other guys? That guy with the glasses back there unloads some big donations sometimes, but I won't talk about it. So does some other people over there. Eugenie is going to be helping a lot with this store, I think, helping fundraise and helping with the correspondence course. And I think environmental coordinator out in Arizona, because that's her passion. And I think she'd be good at it. Like, how do we keep this big, beautiful piece of nature natural and don't let it get polluted or like, I mean, it's a big challenge, actually, because suddenly hundreds of people showed up, and how do you make it, how do you keep it clean and beautiful like that? I think that's about everybody. Those ladies back there have helped out recently at Michael Weeks and with different projects. Stillwell, you know about. The Sarge, you know about. Who did I forget? Winston didn't do anything. okay, Winston. Anyway, help support most of the courses here. I mean, the reason we can give away free notebooks and stuff like that, he and his wife ran the correspondence course out of their basement. Basically, he hasn't slept for 4 years or something. And the whole thing about Arizona, I didn't have to do anything. It's just taking, he's just taking care of it. I mean, it's the haksam namna, personal responsibility, personally taking care that the thing runs right and then it's done. Once I had a problem with an Indian bank, and I don't know, Bruno, I don't know if you remember, he wrote a, he's this nice, quiet, unassuming guy. He runs this high-powered law firm with like 12 lawyers working for him. And he wrote a small letter to the Federal Banking Commission, and suddenly all the money got released to Sarame that the Bank of India was sitting on after 3 months of negotiations. And so I can say that almost every person in this room, and then there's other people that I don't know about, is doing something. It's amazing if you think about the way we started and it was impossible to get anybody to do anything, or, you know, it just seemed like it was hopeless and we were like all thinking all the time that we couldn't get any help. And now I think almost every person in this room, and I'm sorry if the other people, I know you're doing things that I don't know about them, which is a good way. Sam? Sal. Who cares about the, I said the Sarge, yeah. okay. No, but I just mean, it's amazing in an organization when almost every person, you can point to each person and say they're each making a major contribution in some way. And that's really the reward, I think, for this place. I think it's not just that you became Buddhist scholars or you know Buddhist theory, but it appears that you're actually doing it and actually physically helping, okay? And I thank you for that. Okay, it's like I can just look out and see, you know, a whole big room full of people who are all helping, okay, helping other people. So that's just, I mean, it's amazing when you think about it. You can't do that almost anywhere, to sit there and think about how everyone's helping. And still, well, you know, like he did the whole correspondence course, okay, it wouldn't exist. It was, he demanded it, and I said, I don't have time, and he said, well, we're going to do it anyway. So he and Aura retyped the whole thing. Actually, he's good at giving the work to other people. But anyway, and then whenever there wasn't enough money, he just paid for it, like $10,000 here, $10,000 here, you know. And I think now they've sent out millions of pages, okay? And that was all his idea, it was all his concept, and he taped it from the beginning. He was insistent that it should be taped, you know, and he's the only person that had the vision to do that. So I hope the vision continues. God's Store would not be ours if he hadn't stepped in and closed it, okay? He did everything that needed to be done, and many things like that I have to talk about, okay? So anyway, thank you for that, and really come Friday and celebrate and blow it out, okay? And then in February, we'll have another big thing. It'll be, as John said, it'll be midnight mass, okay? Very exciting chance to question the Geshe-mas and give them a hard time. By the way, if you are a Geshe-ma, you have to get the 100 questions. Okay? It's called the 100 questions. It's a document. And be sure to get it before I leave, because that's what you're going to be questioned on. And then 2 days later will be the reception for the book release. Doubleday is helping to pay for that. And there'll be a formal release, and then there'll be sort of dancing, and all the publishing people will go home, and then you can celebrate, okay? And maybe get some food and stuff. All right, so that'll be like 2 days later. And then Sunday will be New Year's Day will be a big vow-taking ceremony. If you already have vows, take them again, okay? The Bodhisattva vows, you can take again. All right, if you're intending to take the vows, you have to... You can take them in the wishing form, which anyone can take, and then the actual action vows, you have to finish course number 7 before then, okay, early February. Then if you have time, come to California for the Heart Sutra on Valentine's Day, okay? It's a 3-day Heart Sutra blowout, so you're welcome to come to that, okay? And I just want to say, you know, thank you, because the main person benefiting from these classes is not you, it's me. And in a way, I feel like you're teaching me, and I still feel that way. So thank you for that. Amen. Okay, do mandala. Okay.
Any volunteers?
They're all working already. We'll do a short mandala. No frustration tonight. Okay. That means we have unfinished business later. Oh, you also have to finish the 18 courses and so you can get the tantric teachings, okay? All right. Okay. It's a short thing. It's too late. We'll do it later. Later. Okay. Do 3 short ones. We'll do 3 short mandalas. So that means you really have to think about it. A perfect world created by everyone doing their book. Okay. The book was Aura's idea, by the way, but I won't tell you that. Okay. What's on that? 3 short ones. Sajibhuti Trishimadhatam Nirabhishinde Kyanadhi Samyasindhu Nikte Tumadhi Idam Guru Rana
Yes, sir.